In Search of Radiance, Class 1, Changes in Our World.
Good evening, everyone. We would like to tell you who we are. We are Ellen's councils, and we're saying plural because there are seven of us, seven different groups that work together with her in an ongoing way. But we are standing at a crossroads tonight. We have invited all of your councils to be with us. So it is a very crowded room here. Everyone's own guidance or inner kin or inner affiliates have all come through to be here. And one of our intentions in asking Ellen to teach this class was that we wanted to create a forum where you could take a pause in your busy lives and come and sit with energies that perhaps you don't get enough time with during your everyday life and begin to feel those energies filtering in to you and informing how you think about things and how you look at your life and how you look at what's happening in the world around you. So it's not going to be entirely what we say that is the point of this class, although we hope we will say some interesting things and that you will enjoy them. It's also going to be the energies or the resonances with which we say them that we are hoping are going to just jog your memories from other parts of your being, jog your ability to tune into that self that you've all met at least once in this lifetime, and many of you have met that wisdom self many, many times, and just begin to get that channel a little more opened so that you can have that awareness of the perspective of your wisdom self at will when you need it. And also maybe you live more in harmony and accord with that part of yourself. So we're not from somewhere else, and we're not something way outside of you. The council level where we live or where most of us stand is the collective consciousness that you all share. And we speak from that perspective, and in doing so, we hope that we can remind you of how close we really are to you. It isn't this difficult and foreign thing that must be learned and mastered. It's the part of you that when you relax, you basically slip into. And so we invite you to just take this however you like. We will be putting out information, and some of it will be to delight your cognitive brains, because we have some wonderful intelligences in this room who love to think and analyze and figure things out. But for others of you, what we say may just flow over you, and it may just be a feeling or a sensation or just a sense of orientation, perspective, or placement that comes to you. And so it's fine. This curriculum is a curriculum in perspectives and how to look at things, not what you're going to see when you look. Okay, so we will give examples of if you look here, that you might see this, but you might see something different. And we just want to reassure you that we hope it will be very, very individualized, even though we've asked for a group, because we wanted the combined goodwill. You are people of extreme goodwill, and we wanted that goodwill to bring some of this awareness and consciousness into your dimension. You have a world that that sadly needs to awaken, and all of you are going to be agents in helping that awakening in your own realms, in your own way. And it's not always going to look spiritual. It might just look like joy or goodwill or kindness or radiance or cooperation. It will take many forms. And so maybe that's one of the first things we want to say, that this is a spiritual curriculum, but we want you to think of spirit as in the sense of rah-rah, like have spirit for something. You go to a game and you have spirit, or someone says, are you in good spirits? That is the root of the spiritual realm, is that part of you that that is designated as spirit isn't something other. It isn't this force outside. It's that force that runs through the human condition, the human, I don't want to say race, what do you want me to say, the human beings that animates them, that makes you alive and that table perhaps less spirited, at least in the way we perceive things here. So we are going to be activating your spirits. That's why we wanted to call it In Search of Radiance, because we're hoping to find that each of you will find your own radiance or remember it, and that's a pretty good perk of the job. So we want to start by talking about what does it mean to stand in your wisdom self? And we've spoken a little about this already, but what does it mean to get guidance or to hear your intuition? And one of the things that we find is that people say, well, I don't know what my teachers are telling me. I don't get a clear message. And there's a certain misconception about the forms these messages will take. Most people, when we guide you, you don't hear us. You don't hear these voices in your head. Some people don't want voices in their head because it reminds them of mental illness. And other people, that's just not the mode in which their wisdom self articulates itself. So we're going to ask you to go a little more three-dimensional in your understanding of how you're going to hear your own counsel's guidance. It might be just that feeling of when you think, well, should I go this way or this way? You feel pulled to go this way. And sometimes that's all it is. It's that little pull in you that says, no, this is the path of wisdom, and I know that one's not going to work out for me. So you have to experiment and explore and see if that's true. And, you know, the kicker in all of this is that sometimes the mind, the fearful mind or the chattering mind gets in the way and says, but that would be awfully nice too. And then you get into a confusion of, do I want this or do I want that? And it becomes difficult to make decisions. But you all can think to a point in your life where it wasn't difficult. You just knew you wanted something, or you knew this felt right to you. Ironically, many of you don't have a problem with opening the refrigerator and saying, what do I feel like eating right now? Okay, some days you do, but there are moments where you open and say, that, I want that. That's also the part of you guiding you to something that might nourish you, unless it's a highly sugared item, in which case it could be an illusion. And that's the challenge in all of this. We'll come back around and around to, how do you tell the difference between true guidance and illusion? But we'll make a lot of analogies, we'll give you a lot of metaphors, and we're going to pull on the reservoir of experiences you all have with this. So, for example, you've all been talking to someone, and the person will be saying, oh, I'm this kind of person, I'm like that, and you're sitting there going, you know, I don't believe them. I know they believe it, but I don't think that's true. That's your wisdom self speaking up and giving you a real insight in that moment beyond the words, beyond the ego, to something that you're just feeling energetically. And you don't always have to act on that feeling immediately. You don't have to, you know, go, bah, bah, bullshit meter, wrong. You know, I mean, you have courtesies in this life that it's good to observe for a time, but it's also good to note it in your mind and honor it or respect it in some way. Even if you go home and write it in your notebook, even if you go home and talk it over with a friend and try to evaluate, why did I have this feeling? This person said this, but that didn't match for me. The more you can work from the inside out, the more you stand one with your wisdom self. And often you look for the evidence of the wisdom self out there. You know, you want the proof or you want the validation. And the validation is there, and it's often quite amusing because you'll have this thought, it'll feel like an insight or a truth, and you'll be thinking, well, this feels like an insight or truth. And you'll be walking down the street and you'll see a sign that says what you've just been thinking. Or you'll overhear someone and they'll be saying the words that just went through your head. Or you'll see an image that seems to capture the essence of what you were thinking. And the universe gives you these moments of validation. And it's a little bit of a habit or trick to gather the validation that reinforces your inner truth without getting caught in the illusion of, oh, I must be powerful because three people winked at me today. You know, you don't want to go into superstition with it. But you all have a lot of good sense. And spiritual attunement starts with good sense and ends with good sense and has a lot of good sense in the middle. So if something doesn't feel wise and doesn't sound wise, it probably isn't wise. And even if someone tells you that they channeled it from another planet or that they're incredibly intuitive and therefore they know better than you, trust your own ability to work it through, to discern and to figure it out. It may not come right away. You may have to think it over for a while. But all of you are here tonight because you're at a certain level of competence with your ability to really sort things out for yourself. Okay, so your culture has this kind of superstition. If it comes from another place, it must be more meaningful than if it's local. So if it comes from another planet, it's got to be more meaningful than something you thought up. If it comes from another country, it's got to be more significant. I'm looking at Judith because I'm about to tell a story. This is me talking, Ellen. And I'll go in and out of Ellen and the council because they'll sometimes ask me to tell stories. We used to live in Switzerland, and I had a practice there. And we moved to Massachusetts, and a friend of a friend came and had a reading, and it went well. It was a nice reading. And I got a call from her about a week later, and she was just laughing, and she said, "You will not believe what happened." And I said, "Okay, what?" And she said, "Well, right after I had my reading with you, I got an email from a friend of mine in Washington, D.C., saying I had to have a reading with this amazing Swiss psychic that she had been to, and that I had to have this reading because she was just so amazing. And even though I just paid for a reading and I had an hour and a half of material to work with, I thought, yeah, I better go hear that amazing Swiss psychic because my friend is raving about her." So I wrote my friend back and said, "Okay, what's her name? I'm going to have a reading." And of course, her name was Ellen Meredith. You know, and we call that the Swiss psychic phenomenon, which is that someone's more amazing if they come from another country, or they're this famous person, or if they, that they have some exotic piece to them. But what I want to say is your teachers are all around you, and it's not even the amazing Swiss psychic Ellen Meredith who's going to maybe be the one to give you your guidance. It might be your cat. It might be the grass that you walk upon. It might be the bells that you hear in the distance that awaken something in your memory. It might be a dream that you have. So pay attention to the fact that the teachers are all around you and come in all different forms, and be highly suspicious if anyone comes along and says, "I speak for the most highly evolved teachers and this is the most wise and fabulous knowledge," because somebody who says that is pretty foolish. And so even if the wisdom that they channel comes from a good source, it's coming through an instrument that does not have a balanced ego. And ultimately, the goal of all of this, you can call it spiritual practice in the sense of we want to be radiant and joyous. We want to get the most out of being here. The most spiritual practice comes through these instruments, which are your bodies, your mind, your everyday life, your everyday experiences. And so the goal of it is to come to greater awareness, greater centeredness, greater service to yourself and others. And ultimately, each of you has a somewhat different purpose for being here. Each of you has a somewhat different mission or set of missions. So you're here to figure out what your truth is and what brings you the greatest joy and fulfillment. And it will be very different from the person sitting next to you and the person sitting next to you and the person sitting next to you. It will be those goals or intentions of what we call your wiser self and your counsels. And you each have counsels. Everyone has between 1 and 7 groups that they work with. And it doesn't make you more spiritual to have seven. It just makes you way busier and a little more pressured. But you all have individualized purposes. And we've spoken about that in Ellen's book, and we will speak about it again in here. That part of your task over the next 8 weeks is to think a little about who are your counsels and what is their larger purpose. One of Ellen's counsels, for example, is teachers and travelers. So their goals are to teach and to bring the seeds of one culture into another. So travel in the sense of spreading a message from one place to another. She has a healer council. She has a council of framers, and their job is to frame situations, to create frames in which things can be viewed in another way. And she has others. So rather than going into hers, we invite you to start playing in your free time with, well, what are those things that really float my boat? What are those things that really awaken me? And when I'm doing that kind of activity, when I'm doing that kind of achieving that kind of purpose, I feel most alive. Okay, so you're asking, where are the times, or when are the times, and where are the places, and what are the kinds of activities that make me feel most true to myself? And if anyone's sitting here going, "Oh my God, I don't know," that's fine. The brain usually catches up a little bit after the rest of the being. We know it in our body, we know it in our heart. And one of the ways, one of the best ways to know some of these inner truths or these deeper purposes is to start knowing what isn't true of you. Okay? Because most people are much quicker to say, "Well, that's not me." This is me, Ellen. I have a list of sports I don't want to try in this lifetime. I just kept a list, and I've given myself permission to try none of the sports on that particular list. And, so I'm pretty sure that whatever is represented by skydiving is not part of my higher mission, because I'd be a little tempted to do it, and I don't feel a whole lot of temptation to do it. So by starting, you can start by looking at what is clearly not true or not your path, and eliminate some bigger things. And you can also look at what you like about yourself. Like, when you are your best self, where are you likely to be? What are you likely to be doing? What kinds of people are you likely to be with? And that starts to give you clues. Now, I will also perhaps over time be giving people things I might see or notice about your counsels if that's given to me, and if I have your permission. And we'll do some exercises and some divination and other things over time to get clearer on that. But for those of you who are sitting here wondering, well, I'm not sure who my guides are or who my counsels are, I invite you to put that question to them. Hey, who are you guys? And will you, over the next 8 sessions, it's not really 8 weeks, it's like 12 or something, but over the course of this exploration, will you make yourself known to me in whatever ways you can get through? And then what we're going to do in here is we're going to just do some shifting and some adjusting to sort of maybe shake free some of the resistances that might be in you. And a lot of you have very little resistance, if any. But some of the ways in which your teachers maybe have trouble getting through to you, we're going to be helping to get do some matchmaking and get those hookups going better for you. Does that make sense? Does anyone have any questions or comments about anything we've said so far?
I'll ask some questions.
Okay.
Do the councils choose us, or do we choose the councils?
You are part of your councils, and your councils are part of you.
It's just part of the being.
It's part of the being. It's like the chord of your nature. It's the essential notes of the chord of your nature. You carry, these councils are there in all of your lifetimes. If you believe in reincarnation or multiple lifetimes, which I do, they are there for all of your lifetimes. It's not like you come into this lifetime and pick up a set of guides. They are the part of you that stands with the divine, however you want to define that.
So you wouldn't have been into skydiving in a previous life.
It turns out it was probably never part of my path. It's true. Falling from heights has probably never been something that made my heart sing. But you know, if one of you was Icarus in another life, possibly that would be on your list.
Why wouldn't it be?
Yes.
So we don't evolve as we go through existences, we don't evolve to where we would have different sets of beings and different sets of growths. We are our being in all the different transitions.
Yes.
It doesn't change.
Okay. Who you are in your wiser self is always who you are in your wiser self. Just like the note on the musical scale A is the note A on the musical scale. But if you put that note in a song by Mozart, it plays a different role than if you put it in a song by Bach, or if you put it in the shower and make it a little off key. So in these lifetimes, you are working to express those notes of your nature, those the chord of who you are in your deepest wisdom self, through different dramas, through different contexts and settings, through different identities. And even in one lifetime, you take on lots of different roles. You take on lots of different identities. The talking self doesn't limit itself to one fixed identity, even within a daytime. You're one person to your partner and another person to the lady down the street and another person to your kids and another person to that obnoxious shoe salesman. So you have lots and lots of opportunities to express your spirit, but does the spirit change? No, because in one part of yourself, you are already whole. And so what spiritual work is about awakening to the wholeness that is already there. And do you become whole? Well, you become more able to encompass your wholeness, to express and feel the largeness and radiance of your being, and you become more skilled at participating in the various activities that allow the different spiritual strands to intermingle and interact and collaborate and come together in beautiful music. Is that too abstract, or didn't that make sense?
No, it made sense. It was just interesting to me to find that I have no problem with the concept of growth and maturing, but I always thought part of maturing and growing is maybe becoming different and seeing things differently. But what you just said is very acceptable.
It's both and. Within the timeline of a single life, you do grow and mature, although some of us are wise at some times and foolish at others, and that's not necessarily linear from young to old. Some of us were incredibly wise children and incredibly foolish adolescents, and, you know, wise young adults and foolish middle adults and wise on Tuesday and foolish on Wednesday. And that's part of the enjoyment of this very strange drama you all find yourselves enmeshed in, or set of dramas. But the notion of evolution from unevolved to more evolved, when you're looking at the larger self stands outside the timeline. So there is a part of you that is the essence of who you are. And the struggle isn't to become good. You're already good. The struggle is to access the feed, the energetic spiritual feed that illuminates you and makes you so wonderfully lovable. And each of you is wonderfully lovable. And some of you have had to suffer feeling that you weren't through some dramas where the spirit was thwarted or the spirit was damaged or the spirit was denied or masked in ways that were very painful, because the spirit wants to express itself through the personality, through your life. It really wants to. I mean, most human beings, unless they're too damaged, truly want to express what's in them in some form. And, you know, that's what the struggle, the cultural struggle is to create frameworks in which that can happen. And there is some cultural evolution, but again, that's on a timeline. And you can't say that we're more enlightened in the year 2011 in some realms than they were in another time and place. It's always relative to what the conditions of that time and place are. Did you see?
Are we in communication with all of our councils in all of our lifetimes? Or is it in some lifetimes maybe we work with certain councils, in other lifetimes we work with other councils? So it may seem like, in fact, we're evolving, but we're only just working with some of our councils.
Yes. You have utter free will to choose to open or close, to choose what you do and how you express yourself and how much of your spirit you allow through. When you come into this lifetime, you put on blinders. And for some people, the blinders are very narrow. So they are very much attached to their role, their identity, what their parents said about them, their job title, their physical being. And they don't see other dimensions and they don't see other levels. Whereas other people come in with blinders that are a little wider, so they get glimpses of parts of the self that might go elsewhere or have other meanings. Just be aware that in some lifetimes you've had very narrow blinders, and perhaps we're not aware of any of your counsels except in a very dim way. And in other lifetimes, you've had the joy of opening to the full complement of the notes that feed you and have some successes in expressing them into that context and into that way, into that time. So, yes, it is possible. Just as if, imagine you're talented in music and you're talented in writing and you're talented in math. And you also have some pretty good physical skill, say a green thumb for gardening. Well, it may be that although you have those gifts, you only develop the green thumb for gardening in most of this lifetime, and the music goes by the wayside for one reason or another. It's like that with the councils. So different lifetimes you come in, you set up conditions, and you enter into that drama, sometimes blindly and sometimes with an open or larger sense of who else you might have been in other places or other times. And for those, if there's anyone here who feels like, oh, reincarnation, what's that? You can also see it as different dimensions of the self. We don't have to get into how true is it that there are past lives or future lives. See them as counterpart selves. See them as you have a bush and the bush has different leaves on it. And each leaf feeds the bush from a different perspective and a different angle. And some of them really thrive and get big and green, and others kind of get brown and spindly. The plant feeds all of them, and some get better nourishment than others depending on where they're placed. And so you can think of your multiple selves or counterpart selves as the different leaves on the bush that you are a member of. And is that you or is that kin? We believe it is other, you know, that there's different measurements of you. And if you want to define yourself as the person in this lifetime that's perfectly valid, then we would call them your counterpart selves or your tribes and your kin. And if you like to see yourself as having a larger identity as a multiple self, then we can say they're your counterpart selves, past life selves, and future selves. Other questions about any of that?
Why have we come into this world having forgotten this other arena?
Okay.
What's the purpose of
that? For the same reason you go to Disneyland and forget about your day job. You come in, I mean, and we're being a little flip here. You come into this life to have the experience of being in this life. And people who are only interested in spiritual evolution are missing the fact that when you're dead, you go back to pure spirit and you are evolved. So this is the place to do all this human stuff that you get to do. So you come in, and each of you has a slightly different purpose. Ellen's purpose is to act as a messenger, and that is one of her core roles or missions. So everything she does has an element of being a messenger or a teacher. That's one of her core roles. And you may look and say, wow, well, I've been a teacher all my life. That's what I did for work, and that's what I do to my household. Or I've been a connector. That's my forte, is I connect people up. So you come in to be able to take whatever it is that is your essential mission or truth, and to practice it in this context. And the blinders just have to do with what was your intention in terms of this lifetime. Anyone who's on the planet now, and I will get into this a little more fully in a moment, anyone who's on the planet now is part of a big transition we're going through. It's a time of great awakening. And probably some of you are here because some things have been sort of lighting up for you and awakening, and you're kind of trying to figure out what all this is that's bubbling up in you over the last year or 2 years or 5 years. And others, you just knew you needed to be here. It is a time where the vibration of the planet or the consciousness is rising. And we don't need to get very esoteric about it at first. We can just say, well, 10 years ago, if you said global warming, some people would nod, and others would go, oh yeah, I don't believe in that stuff. Now, you say global warming, and most people go, yeah, I know what you mean. We're having a climate change, aren't we? People, the consciousness is rising. There's a lot of other evidence, and we want to go into that in a moment, apart from your question. Did we answer your question, or did we go too far afield?
I'll just keep listening.
Okay, so sorry. Sometimes we have trouble focusing from our reality to yours, and that's Ellen's job, but she forgot the question.
So as a follow-up to her versus a clarification for me, there is institutional memory in our being, but it's held within our councils. And it's our councils who, as we transition through experiences, it's the councils that we tap into that have the memories from the past.
Yes.
How we choose to tap into them, or if we choose to tap into them, that's when those memories might surface.
Right, right. And the memories aren't necessary. They can be quite detailed, but that's not what's interesting. So, you know, what your wife's name, if you were an emperor in the second century, is not all that interesting. That's detail, that's fact. And yeah, especially if you didn't like her. But what is interesting is the dynamic that was there that might be influencing the kinds of choices and relationships you make in this lifetime. So understanding that the database is a database of energetic truths and of essences as much as it is of facts or details. And so often when we're trying to get guidance, we're looking for the fact or the information. Should I do this or should I do that? But if you can tap into the essence and say, do I need this kind of energy flow or do I need that kind of energy flow? The guidance is often quite easy to hear. Like, do I need blue or do I need red right now? And often that's an easier question for us to answer for ourselves than, do I need to go to Palm Springs or do I need to stay home and sort my house? So sometimes you have to pull out of the data to let your mind receive guidance that you can then interpret in terms of the questions you're asking or the data you're asking. That makes sense, what we just said. And we will come back to that concept again and again in this class. So if it didn't, don't worry. You will hear it many times. So one of the skills we invite you to cultivate over the next 12 weeks is the willingness to ask questions. If you want to know something, ask the part of yourself that knows. Say, hey, councils, I'd really like to know about this. But when you say no, understand this isn't like a little ticker tape that's going to come in with facts printed on it. If you want that kind of knowledge, the internet is an excellent resource. But what it is going to do is it opens the file cabinet of the wiser self to start to bring you your experiences or your wisdom gained in other settings and other contexts in pictures, in metaphors, in dreams, in sensations, in feelings, in notions, in just moments of feeling a shift where, boy, yesterday I really felt like I needed to accomplish such and such, and today I've just let half of it go because I see that the only thing I really needed was this one piece of that. That's wisdom. That's getting to sort and sort things out. So it's not knowledge we're asking for, it's wisdom. And wisdom isn't something written down, delivered on a piece of paper. It's what reading that thing on the piece of paper opens or aligns in you. Okay? You can hear or read the most foolish, stupid thing you've ever seen, and it can make a light bulb go off in your wisdom self. And you say, oh my God, I get it. I get it. And that's why we say some of your best teachers are ones that don't call themselves teachers. They're that, Ellen has a story for you. I used to go and meditate, do insight meditation, which is silent meditation, which for me is great because I talk a lot. So going and being silent for 10 days was really very good for my spirit. And I went to this meditation retreat, and there's a woman in front of me who was the focus of my entire week because she really got on my nerves, which is really not the point of meditation, is to sit there and be annoyed. And the reason she got on my nerves was she brought her purse to every single meditation session. And I thought, here we are, we're in this loving, kind of secluded place, and she was so anxious about what was going to happen with her purse that she carried it to meditation. She, you know, when she walked, she kept looking at it, like when she did walking meditation. When she went to the dining hall, she had her little purse. And you know, being younger, I was a little arrogant, thinking, oh gosh, why does she need her purse? And this light bulb went off and said, okay, why does anyone need a purse? And I started to see in my own life all the times I'm schlepping my purse. I've got my purse there because I'm so afraid that something that I've got is going to get lost if I don't hold on to it. And I don't trust the people around me enough to say, well, let me find a reasonable place to put the purse and just trust that it'll be okay. And I thought, this woman is teaching me about trust. She's teaching me about problem solving. You know, she had a problem and that's the way she dealt with it. That's what she needed to do to get her week of meditation. She was having a much better week of meditation than I was because I was meditating on why she had her purse. And she, who knows what she was going through, but we have to understand that all around us there's offerings, there's lessons, there's teachers, there's moments that just awaken us. And it's good if you can have humor and you can laugh and then feel compassion. Everything anyone does, if you say, what are the conditions under which I could probably do the very same thing? It, first of all, builds a great sense of compassion and a little more patience with those people who do the stupid thing in that moment where it's really stupid for you to have to watch it. And it's good to keep turning it around and just saying, well, there's an energetic truth here that's different from the data of a lady with her purse at the meditation. And one of the things that's a wonderful wisdom practice that we taught Ellen a long time ago is when you see someone doing something really annoying, for example, you're on the freeway and somebody cuts you off, and you're thinking swear words and thinking that person is so, you know, fill in the blank with negative thoughts. What's a really good practice is to make up the story in which their behavior makes perfect sense and is the right thing for them to be doing, even if it inconvenienced you. So you say, oh my gosh, he just got the call that his wife is in the hospital having the babies, and she was crying saying, please get here as soon as you can. I need you. I can't do this without you. And when you do that, when you make up the story that explains that behavior, and it's probably not not a true story. It's probably somebody who's just maybe in a habit of driving too fast. But if you make up that story, you can in that moment open to your compassion and your recognition that there's a teacher there for you. And then you can ask yourself, when do I cut off people because I'm in a hurry to get to wherever I'm going, or because I just think the road belongs to me and not to them? And so it allows you to bring yourself back to your wisdom self out of the judging mind. And we all have a judging mind. You need it. You need it in order to maintain a self, to have an identity. So judgment isn't bad per se. It's not very fun to be on the receiving ends of someone else's judgments, but the act of judging is the act of discernment, and there's not anything wrong with it per se, but the act of disrespect is problematic, because whenever you make a disrespectful judgment of someone else, you hurt yourself, and you may hurt them as well energetically, because usually they can read it on your face or in your body language or in your mind or from your words. And all of you have been hurt by someone else's careless speech enough to know that it's not so fun to be on the receiving end. So understand that, again, you're not trying to clear yourself of making judgment. You're trying to use your judgment as a productive tool. Is this good? Do you need a break? You're going to have to speak up for what you need, because when I'm channeling, I lose a little track of time and space, and I can go on, and you may be thinking, okay, let's just take a little break. Does anyone want a break or go on for a few more minutes? Okay. We're going to meander through this curriculum. It's not going to be linear. So if you try to figure out what's the outline, please don't stress too hard about it. It will perhaps emerge over time, but it is not linear. We want to talk for 15, 20 minutes right now, or perhaps a little less, about what's going on the planet. Because one of the reasons we invited you all here and called you together is because of this big change that's happening. How many people have noticed some shifts right recently in their lives? Things changing, things being shaken, things looking different, either in your life or just in the world around you. Okay. Up in the bathroom, I read in my People magazine that this year they had 600 tornadoes in Alabama rather than the 250, which was the former maximum. That's a lot of tornadoes. And I think it's a good emblem of the kind of shifts that we're seeing on the planet. So I want to put a very positive spin on what's going on, because it can be, how many people have experienced some roughness around it? Like, it's not exactly comfortable. Okay, and we have compassion for you. It's never comfortable to ride a bucking bronco. You might feel very proud of yourself that you managed to stay on for several minutes, but it's not necessarily a comfortable ride. Right now, the planet is, and there have been predictions about this, there's been many writings, so we're not going to go into long detail, but the planet is increasing its vibration. Donna Eden speaks about it as the planet shifting its life color, and each color has an energetic truth to it, and so there's some characteristics of this shift, and that's what we want to talk about for the next few minutes. It's a little bit what's happening and what you can expect. For the next while, you can expect some real contrasts, contrasts between the positive and the negative. So you might find yourself in a quite creative phase and yet, you know, getting sick or feeling really crappy at the same time. You might feel some real contrasts, and that's part of the nature of the time. You might see some big changes, things that you couldn't predict. Those of you who are quite psychic and are good at predicting things, even people who are quite intuitive are sometimes getting blindsided by unexpected twists and turns of plot. And that's just the nature of the time. But what is happening is the consciousness is rising. And it is rising from a mentality that could have been characterized as either or, black or white. I'm Republican or I'm Democrat. I'm, you know, this is a good person or this is a bad person. You know, good guys and bad guys kind of mentality. That is moving out. As anything moves out, it always kind of comes into great relief and intensifies before it lets go. So you're seeing these polarities much stronger than maybe you did 20 years ago. The politics have become more polarized. The thinking in some people has become more rigid and polarized at a time when you're moving towards a consciousness that is both and, that can embrace the grays, that can embrace the all the nuances and the subtleties and the irony that you're cursing someone who did something that you probably did to someone 3 weeks ago. And love it. Love them for doing it and love you for doing it and love both of you with the hope that both of you will outgrow it and not do that again. You know, the largeness of spirit that people were yearning for is going to be easier and easier for each and every one of you to attain. So that's part of the nature of the time. Everyone who's on the planet now came in to help with this transition in consciousness. Some of them don't look like it because they get to play the villains in the drama. But everybody who's here, if they do not belong in this theme or in this storyline of raising the consciousness of the planet, they will leave. They will die, and you might have noticed how many of you have seen people having some really strange deaths.
Yeah, like people are dying out of the blue. It's like, yes. Oh, well, they weren't here for this then. Yeah.
Right, right. So more than other times in recent history, for sure, and for many times in history, there are some strange deaths happening because people who came in to usher the age up to the transition or to the doorway, and only to do that, are then dropping away again. And people who've come in to make the transition happen are often going through really big sea changes and big identity shifts, even ones that they didn't know about themselves. They're discovering new gifts. They're discovering new relationships that they would never have chosen 10 years earlier. They're discovering that relationships they thought would last a lifetime won't last a lifetime. They're often awakening through difficult experiences like illnesses or losing jobs that they thought were very secure or losing houses, you know, having one of those 600 tornadoes hit their house and having to start over and come to address the question of what's really essential here, what's important, what really matters. You know, I thought it was this, this, and this, but that's gone away with the tornado. So let me rethink what the terms are by which I'm living this life. And sometime in the last 3 years, up till now and continuing for another 6 to 8 months, you all have been or will be asked to renew your contracts. That doesn't mean you're all going to have a near-death experience. Many of you have already said, oh, okay, yeah, I renew it. You've had that moment of reckoning where it's like, do I want to be here? Do I even want to be here? Oh, yeah, I guess I do. Okay, and so some of you have already renewed your contracts, and some of you are kind of in the midst of being asked, well, do you want to? So the only, the homework that we would put for you, and again, it's homework for yourselves, so you won't have to bring it in here and share it, but for yourselves over the next 12 weeks is to say, well, if I'm going to renew the contract, what do I want to put in it this time? What do I want different from what it's been up till now? Because this is a time when those things that you feel are really essential, and I'm not talking about $1 million and a bigger house, okay? What I'm talking about is essential conditions or truths that seem to be supportive of your life's path and your life's work and what you're here to do. But you have some choice, and so it is a good time to be putting in those requests. So we invite you to consciously take some time at least once a week and maybe more often to just work on your new contract. Because this is the time when you get to change the working conditions. You get to change a lot of the conditions that were fixed that you couldn't change very easily. And, you know, several people have dropped weight that they couldn't lose for years and years and years, and then suddenly, boom, the weight went off. And other people have had some obsessive thinking thing that would just have them enthralled, and then it just releases. So it will feel a little like freebies, but it's not. It's that the new energies can support change and can support these shifts in a way that the old energies could not. So something that was very difficult and scary 20 years ago socially can now be very comfortable. And it's because critical mass has been reached in popular opinion, and also because the energies now support those things. So energy healers 20 years ago had to work pretty hard. Those of you who were energy healers 20 years ago had to work a lot harder to get things to shift or move or connect up. And now it might be a matter of point, and activate. And the supports are there for some of these new modalities that are old modalities that are emerging because there's support for it. And we can give an example from your own culture to just demonstrate that. Okay, when most of you were in high school, there was probably a pretty strong dress code. And there was one way. If you were a woman, you had to have your skirt at a certain length. And it probably had to be a skirt. And if you were a man, you had to wear your hair a certain length or wear a certain set of clothes. And it was a very rigid thing. And there was usually only one. The styles changed from long to short skirts and back, but there was one. And there was sort of one set of hairdos that was pretty much acceptable. Well, what's happened now is all the styles that were acceptable through the last 20 to 30 years, now you can choose from any of them. You can wear the long skirt or the short skirt. You can wear the pants or the kilt or whatever. You can have your hair long or short or weird or not weird. You can color it or not color it. And there's much more tolerance for that diversity that was not acceptable 30 years ago in your lifetime. And that's the kind of shift that if you multiply that by everything, you begin to see what this new time can be like. It can be breaking free of those rigid, single-track programs to have more freedom and multiplicity and confusion and all the things that go with the gift of getting to decide how you want your hair rather than the imperative of, well, it's got to be this way, so don't think about it. Or how to form your spirituality, or how to define your work, or how to define relationships. And all of those have burst open as this light is rising of the new consciousness. And you've probably heard about it as the dawning of the age of Aquarius in hair. You've heard about it as the year 2012 coming in. You've heard about it in various forms. And we want to validate that that's true. So one of the things that's coming up is breaking apart of the black-white thinking. And so, for example, in the American political scene right now, you see some very bizarre polarities. It's the last gasp. So see it as a good sign because it's so clearly untenable that even people who thought that black was true or white was true are scratching their head and saying, that can't be true. That's not really real. Those polarities, so that's breaking free people who never questioned the norms or the messages of their culture before. They're having to question because it's such a farce. Okay, so you can enjoy the farce rather than going to fear with it, because it is a good indication that things are in fact shifting and will shift. And in the presence of the new consciousness as it comes out and surrounds all of us, all of you, old forms that are too rigid will either explode or implode. They will fall apart. So businesses will fail, or people who were petty tyrants, they will fall. And you're seeing that in many countries of the world where people who have been dictators for 30 years, it's fallen. And you can look at exoteric reasons such as the internet and the communication explosion, or you can look at esoteric reasons and their reflections of each other. The exoteric tools have been developed to support the esoteric or inner truth that's emerging. So it's very fun to watch these things and say, how is this evidence of new consciousness, even when it looks like a bunch of oinkers doing wacko things? And you can then enjoy it as a kind of high drama, tragedy, melodrama, and know that that will maybe give way to more nuanced scenarios in another 5 to 10 years. Okay? So that's one of the changes. On a personal level, one thing that's really shifting, and we talked about the black and white, it used to be that the purpose, and you asked your question, well, what do we come here for? And one of the answers is that my teachers taught me years ago is they said, well, the word we use for it is increase. You come here to play your spirit on an instrument, and somehow that enriches the music, that enriches the spirit, and it enriches the world and the instrument. So increase is what we do that glorifies the human condition through acts of kindness and through acts of love and through acts of support and all of those positive qualities that make us feel alive and good. Another person that Ellen knew that we have also been in contact with uses another term that we like quite a bit, so we're going to borrow her term. Her name is Kim Sear, and what she calls it is contrast. That the purpose was to come in and create contrast. You create something, and through adversity, you overcome. And if you think of the hero's journey, okay, the hero's journey, that story where someone comes in through trial and tribulation and working really hard, they overcome their difficulties and they succeed, and there's wonderful music at the end, and they're glorified by that. Now, that is contrast, and that has been in our culture. That's the purpose. If you come in and you work at the post office every day and you have a mediocre existence and you don't do much for anyone, you don't hurt anyone, you don't help that much, you do what you can, and you go home, nobody's that interested in you because your story doesn't have much contrast. But if you go to your job at the post office for the, you know, in year 22, and you notice a package that's suspicious and you call the bomb squad and it turns out to be a bomb and you save 40 lives, all of a sudden you're a hero and your work at the post office has meaning. And you have meaning because the contrast that was created in that drama suddenly brings you attention and love and the interest of your fellow human beings. We're programmed for contrast. And what supported that contrast, that hero's journey kind of thing, and that's where you find people who are drama queens, where, you know, they don't just, you know, they don't just go to the grocery store. It's like, oh, you would not believe what a day I have had. I looked for the items on my list, and I only found 2 of 7. Can you believe it? I could not find the 7 items. I came, and isn't that how life treats me? That's a kind of contrast mentality where it's this big drama that she couldn't find all seven items. And another stance would be, God, you know, I love peas, and look, I got 3 cans of them. I'm going to have a happy week because I really love these canned peas and found them. You know, so again, there's a lot of dramatization that goes on. We create pain so we can overcome it, so we can feel good. And that's different from just feeling good because we feel good for something that's quite random, but makes you happy. So along with contrast, our culture, your culture, has had competition. Why? How do we get contrast? Well, we make everyone compete so that writing the paper isn't so worthwhile, but if you get an A on it and everybody else gets Bs, all of a sudden you're the hero. You're the smart one. It says something about you. And so the education system is built around competition. The sports are built around competition. The whole culture, the business world, is built around competition. So that's the old paradigm, contrast and competition. And some of you enjoy both of those things. Everybody here probably has a moment where they really enjoy a good competition, you know, a nice video game where they win, or, you know, a nice tennis game where they win this time, or a conversation where they make the best point, or a moment where they feel quite
quite heroic because they did something good. So it's not that these things are bad, but they're shifting. And they're not going to be the end-all and be-all of what your life is about. So what it's shifting into is what we call confluence and collaboration. So confluence is when different streams can come together and collaborate, where I have a gift and you have a gift, and bringing them together creates something new and wonderful and interesting and delightful to the spirit.
Can you stop for a minute? Where is that?
Confluence
and what?
Confluence and collaboration.
Oh, thank you.
It's okay. We'll say them again and again. So moving from contrast and competition, which is the black and white, either or thinking, to a both and wiser, larger conception of things, which include the confluence as a goal. Like, I'm a good person if I get 12 people together in a room who are all amazing and we all get to have a really fun time for 8 weeks. That's an accomplishment. No one loses. No one wins. It's just a wonderful confluence that can support collaborations of all different kinds, that can make your spirits get activated and you can go home with your spirits singing, and that means your life takes on more meaning. And it's not because you discovered the bomb and at the post office, and it's not because you did it better than you and you knew better than this and you were smarter than that. It's not that old thinking at all. It's a whole different thing that brings fulfillment and pleasure. And that's what's moving in as the new consciousness. That's what the new wisdom is about, is being able to hold a recognition that many different parts can come together and make very interesting and fun and enlightening combinations and collaborations in all different ways that can accomplish different things. And it's not like the goal is for everyone to rise as high as they can on a ladder. Climbing a ladder is an old paradigm thinking. Creating a journey that's a path that you and others can follow is a new kind of thinking. And whether your path is a spiral or is a meander through a territory that you're discovering or whatever, you get to define what that is. There's no one goal that each of you should set for yourself. So for each of you, being a good person is going to look very different. What your good is going to look very different from what your good and your good and your good. And it's coming from these inner messages of who you are and what these notes are that want to be expressed. And if you have these notes and, you know, you're a violin, you're going to express your notes very differently than someone with the same notes, but they're a bassoon. And you're going to be even more different from someone who's a piccolo and also has different notes, but they all come together to make a symphony or an orchestra that can make a kind of collaborative sound that has some advantages to the solo instrument. And it's not even either or there. You can dance in and out between the solo instrument and the collaborative or collective. So the me and mine and the isolation that many of you have suffered in this first phase of being in the old paradigm, that's going to start to shift, and you're going to be finding your tribes. You're going to be finding those people who have the same counsels or the same purposes. And the old paradigm was your tribe was your family, your biological family. Your tribe was the people in your town. Your tribe were the people at work who had the same profession. Your tribe were defined by factors that maybe didn't have to do with who you are inside. In the new way of being that is coming in quite rapidly, you'll find your tribe as those people who have some of the same purposes or who harmonize well with you, who you feel connected to or affiliated to. It might be across geographical boundaries. And of course, you now have the lovely internet to facilitate that. So you see the tools are coming up to facilitate these different kinds of energetic connections. So those of you who've suffered a lot from loneliness or from isolation, some of that's going to be falling away as you find your true family, your true affiliates, your true connections. If you're the blue flame, you're going to find the other blue flames. It's
they say it is written, but in fact, it's just the nature of how that energy is evolving and what can happen within that context. And if you think about it, you walk one way when you're on the earth in the air, and you move a very different way in water. And you can do different things in water than you can do on earth. And by the same token, you moved one way in the old energy, which was a certain vibration, and as you move into the new vibration, you'll move in a very different way. So what we invite you to do is have fun with playing with some of the freedoms that come with the new medium. So if you want to say the new medium is water, you might move more slowly, but you're more buoyant. And maybe you don't cover the same territory, but sounds get amplified. We don't want to stretch the metaphor too far beyond its credulity, but just be aware that this is a time of experimenting and playing with what is available to you and letting your mind loosen a little, that it is not a linear progression from who you have been. Who you have been is all grist for the mill. You don't lose your memories, you don't lose those skills, but your interests shift and new abilities come in. And this is the time to be dreaming a new contract for yourself and really think big. What is it you want? But it's not competition and it's not contrast. It's not the hero's journey. It is the journey of fulfillment. Does that make sense? We need to stop. Unfortunately, I had great plans to have a long discussion period. And if we need to discuss at the beginning of next time, we can, because I just channeled too long. Anything further, I'm open. Any comments or thoughts or questions that arise from that whole mess of stuff?
I'm just wondering why now?
Why now?
Why this time?
Yeah. Good question. Can we take it up next time? And I'm not putting you off. I just think they're going to have a way longer answer than I would dip into. But I think a short answer to why now is to turn it around and say every point on the timeline is a now. Why did you choose to come to this now? Because it's in your nature to help with this, to help be a midwife for this transition. So it's not why now, you know, 1200 BC, why now? 1322 AD, why now? There was a now in each of those. Why are you here now? For some of the reasons they talked about. But there's a bigger answer about evolution of cultures and of energy streams. So I can do that if people are interested.
Why so much talk about what's happening with the planet? My sense of who our beings or our spirit is transcends anything that we would call planet.
Absolutely.
And so I'm a little bit inquisitive as to, I'd love to know why we try to associate, other than the fact that we're living here and we have this timeline that exists here, but I think that our beings exist in a lot of places.
They absolutely do. And the part of your being that exists in those places doesn't have these questions. It knows the answers. So the people who are here in body, in identity, who have to get our taxes paid and have to, weed our gardens and clean our houses, need some context for understanding the energies that fuel the endeavors and the basis by which they would choose this endeavor over that endeavor. So the focus of this class is to address us as people here on the planet, as human beings and human doings, in a way that starts to open us to greater access to that dimension. But it's not just about knowing it. It's, you know, you can sit here and look at the divine or at those dimensions, and you can get some expansion from that. But it's also useful to take your consciousness to those dimensions and look at the here and now. And that's what they're doing, is from their perspective, looking at us and showing us what they see.
so that we can look at ourselves as from the perspective of our wiser self and like ourselves better and celebrate ourselves better and you know, activate our potentials and our gifts more with more ease. Did that answer it? I hope.
Yeah, it doesn't deal with the fact that I question why we would allow the limitations and the rules of a world mm-hmm. determine in any way who yeah. or what our spirit is or can be.
Yeah, and they don't. But who and what our spirit is determines how we navigate the rules and structures. So it is a course in looking how are you navigating these cultures and how can you bring your wisdom self to bear to navigate more skillfully.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Yes, the cosmic traffic jam.
Yeah.
That's a
person. Yeah. Yeah, you sort of think, oh my God, really? Where? What a fixer-upper. So we have to go back and forth between the perspectives in order to handle both, because we're both beings and doings. You know, we've got both of those. I'm just curious, that was a lot of energy. What are people feeling right now? Well, we knew you were she who has been practicing this kind of energy transfer.
Well, I had a specific question earlier, and they answered it exactly in one line. It was so good.
Good. Excellent. And they will do that as some of you think questions that you're not ready to say because they're too personal. They will throw something in that's worded just for you. So feel free to take it personally. Unless you are insulted by it, in which case I wasn't intending you at all. And nothing to do with you. Okay, so you're ready to go forth and work on your contract? And no, play with your contract. Why work on it? That's the old modality. It should be fun.
Is this the only time that we've ever been able to negotiate our contract?
No, there have been periods of time historically where there were great changes happening, and the people who came in to usher those changes also might have had a before and after. This is one of several nodes of shifting. I've been using notes because I'm very tonal. Let me use colors. There was a blue era, there was a yellow era, there was a red era, and a green era, and the vibration of each color is different. So the people who are, you know, between red and yellow, they come in and they do orange. Mm-hmm. And they transition the world to that next place. And we're moving, according to Donna Eden, I'm not very visual, but according to Donna Eden, we're moving from blue to indigo. Mm-hmm. And so whatever stands between blue and indigo, that's what we're all doing here to usher in when we can have clarity and aren't just going, okay, leave me alone, I don't want anything to change. Or whatever those of you do, that's what I do. Okay, give me a junk novel I've already read. I'm going to reread it for the fourth time and pet my cat. And that's okay, too. Sometimes you just have to do that, too. One thing I didn't say that I can tell you is I brought some toys that I encourage you to play with if you want. They're divination tools. And this monster is a do-it-yourself, what do we call it? Do-it-yourself gypsy fortune-telling cards. I taught a class in divination 24 or 5. And the assignment in the class was for people to design their own divination tool. Divination is the ability to use a tool to access the wisdom self. So runes, tarot, I Ching, the bones, astrology, those are all divination tools. So their assignment was to make their own. And one of the students in the class, she made this, and she was an artist. So she basically took 500 cards and cut pictures out of magazines and pasted them on the cards. And then she took layouts that I had taught them from the tarot. And so she went to a party dressed as a fortune teller. And she said, okay, I'm going to have, this is a do-it-yourself fortune telling card. So I'm going to help you do your own fortune telling. And so people would come up to her. They would ask a question. They would choose a layout. They would choose cards. And then she would help encourage them to talk their way through what the cards meant to them. So the quick and easy way to use this, and I encourage you to play with it if you come early or stay late, is to just ask a question. And the question is, the best questions usually start with, please give me insight into. Because if it's, should I do this or that, you won't know how to interpret what you get. But if you say, please give me insight into my relationship with so-and-so, or what's happening at my job, or what's going on with my knee, then you can just reach in the box and choose a card, and then look at the image and interpret what that image says to you about that situation. And free associate, and you can even get friends and other people in the class to say, well, what do you see in this image? And see what they say and apply it. It's an insight gaining tool. It's not a right answer machine. Okay? So, but it's very fun. So if you want to come in and ask a question, draw a card, or want to do it tonight, I'll put this out. And then the other, for those of you who have trouble with images that are too complex and you don't know what the hell they're saying, these are a little more, and you know, sometimes we're just not in the mood for mysteries. These are angel cards, and they just have a single word on it. So you might say, you know, please give me insight into, you know, what the flea situation with my cats. Well, that's pretty specific. Let's do something nicer. Then please give me insight into what my cousin is going through and how I can help. And then you might draw a single one, and I got forgiveness. So then you can play with, well, what does that word say to me about the quality that I'm being guided to pay attention to in relationship to my question? Okay, so they're here to play with, and you can play together or solo with these, and I'll just put them out, and I'll bring them each time. So, you know, if you want to come in and say, give me insight into what my issue is tonight that I want to keep in the forefront of my mind, and choose a card or whatever, and then just put them back when you're done, so that the set stays whole.